Here they come. Turn four. Final lap.
Rev up your engines and get ready for the racing weekend.
Checkered flag.
It's Chasing Checkers with your host, Chase McCabe, on Nashville's best sports talk,
ESPN.
102.5 The Game and the Game Nashville app.
And welcome into Chasing Checkers here on ESPN 102.5, the game, streaming on the Game Nashville app. Hoping you're having a great start to your Saturday morning. Chase McCabe here with you. It's all presented by Apple Collision Centers, and it's finally here. Championship weekend at the Phoenix Raceway. I'm actually going to be headed to Phoenix here in just a little bit because excited to go watch the championship for the Xfinity Series a little later on today. And also the Cup Series tomorrow, of course. Congratulations to Ben Rhodes for winning the Camping World Truck Series Championship. So he is the first to get it done at Phoenix and bring home some of the big hardware. What we're going to do today is you're going to hear from NASCAR President Steve Phelps here in just a little bit as he gave the State of the Sport address yesterday. So you're going to play a portion of that. You're also going to hear from car owners Rick Hendrick and Joe Gibbs, as they each have two drivers in the championship for. So we're going to play a little bit of those press conferences for you and sprinkle in some of the drivers in the championship for as we go along as well. But Martinsville, of course, was a very wild race, as you would expect it to be. Alex Bowman getting the win, but it was not without controversy because it was about six or seven to go, and he and Denny Hamlin, who had been racing for the lead there at Martinsville, got together. Denny Hamlin goes spinning and was obviously not happy about it. Bowman goes on to win the race, the Xfinity 500 at Martinsville. And we will start with what happened after the race. Bowman is going to celebrate, and Hamlin comes pulling onto the front stretch, kind of gets into him. They go nose to nose, and obviously there's a little standoff there at the OK Corral. But ultimately, Denny Hamlin's crew was able to talk him down and say, just let it be. And he then had a lot to say afterwards that you'll hear in just a second. But Alex Bowman is the winner, Kyle Busch second. And even though Kyle Busch came home second, he still missed out on transferring into the championship four. Brad Keselowski third. Martin Truex Jr., as a result of his fourth place finish, will transfer into the championship four. Then William Byron, Eric Almirola, Kurt Busch, Eric Jones, Chris Buescher, Joey Logano, rounding out the top 10. So your championship four after Martinsville, Kyle Larson, of course, with his 9 wins on the season. He is going for win number 10. Chase Elliott has 2 wins. Martin Truex Jr. with his 4. Denny Hamlin with 2. But that is your championship for Hendrick versus Joe Gibbs Racing. So first, let's hear from Kyle Larson with NBC Sports as he got out of the car after winning the race.
I just got loose in. I got in too deep, knocked him out of the way, and literally let him have the lead back. So for anybody that wants to think that I was trying to crash him, but obviously it wasn't the case, considering I literally gave up the lead at Martinsville to give it back to him. So he's been on the other side of that. He's crashed guys here for wins. I hate doing it. Obviously, it's not. I don't want to crash somebody, and I just got in, got loose underneath him, and spun him out. So regardless, we get a freaking grandfather clock. It's pretty special. I've struggled here for a long time. So I was trying to get the flag, do a backwards victory lap. So Mark Martin thinks that's cool, and Mark Martin's like my hero. So obviously, like I said, hate we wrecked the 11, but man, how about that for Chevrolet and Ally and everybody on this 48 team? 48 cars won here a bunch. It's cool to do it again.
So to clarify, there was or was not intent in your second contact with Denny?
No, I just got loose underneath him. Like, I'm not trying to drive under there and crash the guy. I hadn't run into him. I caught him. I got under him fair, under him clean, and I just got sideways underneath him and spun him out. So hate to do that, obviously unintentional, but part of short track racing.
As you're celebrating, he pulls up to you. What was your reaction to that?
I wasn't gonna get into any, this isn't Bowman Gray Stadium, right? This is the Cup Series. So as much as we could have made the highlight reel, we might climb the fence here because I want to see my engine tuner do it. The fence might come down, but it's one of those deals.
All right, so there you go. You have one side of the equation there with Alex Bowman saying that, you know, he got loose. He didn't mean to wreck him intentionally. You know, that was basically the explanation that he provided, and I'll be honest, I believe it. I think that, you know, that certainly was it. I don't think he was trying to wreck Denny Hamlin. I mean, I think he was trying to drive aggressively and go for the win, but I don't think he was trying to intentionally crash the 11 car. It was just short track racing and one of them racing deals, as they say. Alex Bowman has shown that he has grown at every kind of racetrack. He's got 4 wins on the year. And I think that you're just going to continue to see him get better and better and better. There's raw talent like a Kyle Larson and a Chase Elliott. And then there's Alex Bowman that I think has had to work a little harder than some of those guys. And there are drivers that they have to work a little bit harder. And there's nothing wrong with that. I respect that. And Bowman has shown that he has that type of talent. Denny Hamlin, of course, was interviewed just after Alex Bowman and had some very strong words for the driver of the 48.
He's just a hack. He's just an absolute hack. He gets his ass kicked by his teammates every week. And terrible. He's just terrible, and he sees one opportunity and he takes it. But obviously, you know, he's got the fastest car every week and he runs 10th. So he you know, didn't want to race us there. We had a good clean race. I moved up as high as I could on the racetrack to give him all the room I could, and he still can't drive.
To be that close with the day you guys had to come from the back, how much more frustrating does that make it to get cleaned out, in your opinion, there at the very end?
I didn't hear what you said.
To have the day you guys had coming from the back like you did, does that make it worse at the end?
No, I mean, you know, we got in, we did what we had to do, but like, I just wanted to race there at the end, and just, you know, he's just terrible.
And I thought Dale Jarrett had a pretty funny line saying that's basically saying like that's one of the more talented hacks I've ever seen, if that's the case. But listen, I'm fine with being frustrated. You've heard me say this before. You get out of the race car, it doesn't go the way you wanted. I mean, Denny transfers in. He's in the championship four. He's had a very, very strong year. But he wanted to win the race. You know, Martinsville is he's a Virginia guy, so I mean it's home state track. He's very good there. Wants another grandfather clock, and it just didn't work out. And then, you know, I think it adds fuel to the fire that people were booing him after his running with Chase Elliott from several years ago. So he was, you know, he was peeved, and that certainly comes with it. But I think it's unfair to say that Alex Bowman was a hack. And Bowman took it in stride and had fun with it. There's T-shirts. I know Bob Pockrass asked Denny Hamlin if he had gotten the T-shirts. He said no. But Hamlin has a chip on his shoulder, and you can tell that the frustration of having that moniker of being one of the best drivers in the series to not have a championship, I mean, it weighs on him. And I know he talked a lot this week about that, of using that as fuel and the haters and all of that. And, you know, you get it, whether you like him or you don't. And I happen to like Denny. I've always had a lot of respect for Denny Hamlin. Think he is a very talented race car driver. And I appreciate him as he drives with a chip on his shoulder. But in the post race, he was a little more in depth about things and still was not very happy.
I mean, I think he sent us on the first lap after the restart. He just pushed us all the way until we got into the 3 and 4. So that didn't work. I got back position on him, and then he just kept, you know, running into us. And I finally just moved up and said, "All right, fine. If you're better, just go pass." And I think he saw it wasn't going to be easy, so he just took the easiest route possible.
And again, when I watch it, I don't see Bowman taking the easy way out. I don't think he intentionally did it. Now, there's a difference in you know, hooking a guy and just completely wrecking him and then getting to the bumper. The bump and run, using the bumper, is a very common thing at Martinsville and at all these short tracks. So I get that. But I didn't see that being intentional or the easy way out. So there you go. So there's that. We'll see what happens moving forward between Alex Bowman and Denny Hamlin. Now, something else that took place, I mentioned Kyle Busch finished second. He had Brad Keselowski behind him, and because of where the 19 car Martin Truex Jr. was, he finished fourth. The only way Kyle Busch or Keselowski, for that matter, were going to transfer was they had to win the race. Kyle was, you know, not he had a pretty good restart. Looked like he may could get to the bumper of Alex Bowman, and I do believe he would have wrecked him if he had. But it didn't happen, and so at the end of the race, Keselowski is on the bumper of the 18, gets him loose. They have a little bit of a kind of get into each other after the race, and Kyle in the TV interview wasn't really asked about it and was fine, was just talking about missing the cut for the championship four. But as he met with reporters on pit road, Dustin Long, you know, asked him about the incident, and he got, you know, he was very agitated, and I'll read some of it for you. Said, well, he drills my ass coming out of four for no reason. I mean, where was he going? What was he going to do? Spin me out. He was trying to do a Harvick. That's what he was trying to do. For what? For second place? To do what? He wasn't going to transfer through with that. This is where he gets in trouble and there's controversy. He says a slur, talking about it, basically saying it was dumb, but that wasn't the word that he used. So stupid. I don't understand these guys. I should beat the bleep out of him. Right now, that's what I should do, but that doesn't do me any good either. I already had to pay enough fines in my lifetime. I'm sure I'll get another one. Now, because of that comment and the word that he used, NASCAR did not fine him, but NASCAR has said that he must attend sensitivity training before the start of the 2022 Cup Series season. I agree with that move that NASCAR made. You know, there are certain words that I will admit I have used that word in the past. A lot of us have. But now times are changing. We're learning more. We're evolving. We're getting better. And so there's just no place for it. And NASCAR looks at this as a very serious thing and therefore decided that Kyle needed to get sensitivity training to be able to be better and be a better person and be a better ambassador for their sport. And his car owner, Joe Gibbs, commented on the situation.
Yeah, I think, you know, Kyle, you know, knows he should not have used that word. And I think NASCAR's response to it is appropriate.
So that's Joe Gibbs, car owner of the 18, after the thing that Kyle Busch said. When we come back, we're going to hear from NASCAR president Steve Phelps. You're going to hear his opening remarks and a few questions on the state of the sport. Did a condensed version on that, so we will do that when we come back here on Chasing Checkers, ESPN 1025 The Game, all presented by Apple Collision Centers, ESPN 1025 The Game, and the Game Nashville app. And welcome back in to Chasing Checkers here on ESPN 102.5 The Game, presented by Apple Collision Centers. Chase McCabe here with you here every Saturday at 9, at least for the next few weeks as we wrap up the NASCAR season. We will have some special stuff around the awards banquet that'll be later this month here in our city. So looking forward to that. And, of course, as I mentioned, this weekend in Phoenix for Championship Weekend. So be keeping an eye at Chasing_Checkers on Twitter, Chasing Checkers Radio on Instagram and YouTube. Have a lot of content coming out of Championship Weekend that we'll also share on next week's show. So without further ado, let's hear from NASCAR President Steve Phelps as he gives his State of the Sport address.
Let me start by thanking you guys. This is my 2018, 19, 20, my fourth time addressing our media corps for a State of the Sport at season end. And I always start by thanking you. And I'm going to do that again today because you all, whatever outlet that you represent, whatever medium that we're using or that you are representing, you are the ones that bring the storylines to light. You are the ones that bring the characters in our sport and bring them out and bring them to life, right? And you are a very, very important part of our sport. So I want to thank you for all you do. We have a we have a long season. I love the length of our season, but it's not easy, right? And you guys represent yourselves and your outlet and this sport for many of you, you know, 12 months a year and other as you're following the circuit. So I want to thank you. Second, I want to add my congratulations to our drivers in our four national series, as well as the ARCA West series that we'll race this weekend. I think we've got some very deserving drivers in all four series, but certainly as we talk, and we'll mostly talk about our national series here, I think we've seen some incredible racing, but the drivers for the Camping World Truck Series, the Xfinity Series, and the NASCAR Cup Series, I believe are very deserving to be here, and I wish them well. I hope you all, whether you're from Phoenix or you're from around the country or around the world, that you see just a tremendous energy level here at the raceway. And more broadly, Avondale, downtown Phoenix, when you flew in, that you saw signage and things that represent that we are here in Phoenix and that this is our championship weekend. I think we didn't have the opportunity to do a lot of that last year because of COVID. But this year, I think Julie Giese and her team have done a terrific job. Eric had mentioned the sellout on Sunday. We are trending well ahead for Friday and Saturday, and that's exciting. You know, the fans are excited to be here, whether they're camping one day, you know, in and out, just a tremendous energy level that is part of this championship weekend. Excited about that. So moving on to what I'll call kind of the state of the sport portion of this, and then, as Eric said, I'm happy to answer any questions we can in the allotted time. But I was reflecting, and I talked to a couple of folks here earlier. The first time I had the opportunity to do this was in 2018 in Miami. You know, at that particular point, the sport was going through some challenges, right, or some headwinds, and those were real, and I think we felt that. I remember using the phrase that our best days were ahead. I'm not sure everyone in this room or folks around the country or the world believe that to be true. I did, and I think the results that we have seen are more than encouraging. They are, I'm very proud of them, right? And it really took an industry coming together in order to make that happen, right? It took race teams and our broadcast partners, our sponsors, tracks that we own or tracks that we don't own, that all came together to create an opportunity for our sport to grow, which is exactly what's happening. So if you think about the racing product itself, I like to start with the racing product because that's our business. We race. And I think the racing that we have is absolutely terrific. And if you do it from either an eye test or emotional test, or actually the data would suggest that we've had one of the best, if not the best, racing competition level in the history of this sport. So you look at green flag passes for the lead, and I think it's the second since 2007, the most passing throughout the field that we've had ever. These are, you can feel it, right? Great storylines that are coming out of it as well. I would say the drivers right now are up on the wheel more than any other time in our history throughout the field, and it's exciting. So how does that translate to engagement? Our digital and social numbers are the highest they've been since 2015, and we continue to add on the social side. And that, we feel that energy level and that excitement level throughout the digital and social channels. Television, which gets a lot of focus, we are the most stable television, the most stable sport on television since 2018. No other sport, none, can match what NASCAR has done from a stability standpoint with our ratings. And if you consider our share number since 2019 in our Cup Series is up 18%, which is hard to do at this point. It's just hard. And then you look at our ratings for Xfinity and our Camping World Truck Series, they're up double digits. And the share in both of those series are up 25 to 30%. So we are having a moment as a sport. It's important that we keep it going, which is exactly what we're going to do. We're going to continue to invest. We're going to continue to collaborate with the rest of the industry to continue the growth that this sport is on. One thing I did want to touch on, and I think it really is kind of reflective of our sport and why this award is so important. You know, we're a sponsor-centric sport. So a lot of folks really kind of just consider the kind of the reporting out to be the sport portion of any sport. Given the importance of sponsorship to our community and to NASCAR overall, the race teams, the racetracks, for NASCAR in 2020 to be honored as Sports Business Journal League of the Year, I think speaks volumes to how far the sport has come. And every single person who's part of this industry, including the folks in this room, were part of that. Last year wasn't an easy year, but we persevered, and frankly, we are a far stronger sport today than we were pre-pandemic. And I would argue with anyone who would say otherwise. Then as we look forward into 2022, obviously we've got a significant change that's happening in the sport, which is the car that we're going to drive. The next-gen car is an important part of the future of where NASCAR is going to go. And it really hits on a lot of different important things for this sport, whether you're talking about relevance, you're talking about styling, you're talking about bringing this car to a place that, you know, frankly, the existing car can't bring us to. The technology in the car, the data that's going to spin off that car, all designed to enhance the fan experience. And that's what I think is going to happen here. And it will create some opportunities for race teams to be competitive for a long time. And I think the racing itself is going to be one that is, it's going to continue the momentum that we've had from a racing standpoint and a competition standpoint. Is it going to be exactly like it is today and significant number of passes for the leads and throughout the field? I don't know. But I do know that our race teams, our drivers, our OEMs, our own competition people will make sure that this is going to be the best racing we've ever had in this race car.
Jim Mutter, Motorsport.com. Two questions. First, kind of off what your recent comments about the sport being stronger since pre-pandemic. The beginning of the season also featured a vast restructuring of the Cup schedule that had been planned for a long time and the continued development of the next-gen car. I was just wondering, and one of the networks, you know, even used the slogan, best season ever. I just wondered, looking back at this season so far, how much do you feel that the schedule actually transformed the Cup Series?
Yeah, it's a good question, Jim, and I should have addressed that in the opening, but I appreciate you bringing it to the group here. I think the schedule variation is critical for the success of the sport. I think you saw really strong results from schedule variation, whether you're talking about COTA, you're talking about Road America, you're talking about even format changes like Bristol Dirt, right, which might as well have been a new venue. And so Ben Kennedy and the team put together the most aggressive schedule we've had in 50 years. I think it worked. If you look at attendance, it was fantastic at all of the new venues. I thought the racing was really good at all the new venues. And as we look to the schedule in 2022, going to the LA Coliseum to kick off our debut with our next-gen car, as a proof point, frankly, to, hey, we can do things. We're going to be bold in what we're doing, whether it's the schedule or the car, all of it. We're going to take calculated risks. But to answer your question, I thought the schedule variation was very important. The reason why we're able to do schedule variation, frankly, is, you know, the two public companies that dominated the Cup schedule were, you know, they had responsibilities to their shareholders. And those shareholders wanted to see a return on the investment they were making in those public companies. So NASCAR merging with International Speedway Corporation and Speedway Motorsports going private were things that people don't think about, but that were very, very important to the success of the sport and will be for decades to come. So, and I don't know what the 23 schedule is going to look like, but I know it's not going to look like the 22 schedule. And what's your second question, Jim?
Second question was, over the last several weeks, especially, there's been some comments by drivers talking about things related to, like, policing, NASCAR policing on the track and things related to the next-gen car. But there seems to be sort of a perceived disconnect between the relationship between drivers and NASCAR itself. I know there were, you know, obviously there were things like the Drivers' Council before. I just wondered how you view the current relationship between the drivers and, like, the NASCAR executive, sort of speak.
Yeah, so I would say, Jim, that we went through a stretch in the summer where the drivers felt that they didn't know enough about the safety of the next-gen car and were vocal about it. What I can say is we had repeatedly met with the drivers to try to alleviate their concerns about safety. With that said, they weren't in a good spot, and so we just kept meeting with them and making different opinions and experts available to them, specifically around the test that we did down in Daytona. And I think the drivers are satisfied with the answers that they heard. So I would say as we looked at, you know, kind of June, July, early August, I think that's probably a fair statement that the drivers and the sanctioning body were not on the same page. But I think right now I believe the drivers are, you know, feel good about the direction of the next-gen car, both from a drivability standpoint, since most of them had the opportunity to drive it now, and from a safety perspective. So I would say that we endeavor to make sure that our drivers understand where we're going, what's the vision of the sport, what's the direction we're going in, what role they play. And I think there are, although there isn't a driver council per se, you know, we've had, I think, 3 all-driver meetings. We speak with drivers all the time. You know, I speak with drivers myself. If they have concerns, I want to address them. And I know the entire NASCAR team feels the same way. Do I think that the communication between our drivers and the sanctioning body can improve? Yeah, it can. And it's going to. And so I think there's some different things that we've spoken to some veteran drivers about that will address some of those. May not be a driver council per se, but we'll continue to have all driver meetings. We'll probably have some smaller meetings with a handful of drivers, and then we'll have individual driver meetings. So to answer your question, Steve O'Donnell and I met with individually with probably, I don't know, 12 or 15 drivers, just to make sure they were comfortable with the direction that we're moving in.
And when we come back here on the show, you will hear from team owners Rick Hendrick and Joe Gibbs as they get ready for championship weekend in Phoenix. It's Chasing Checkers, presented by Apple Collision Centers here on ESPN 102.5 The Game and The Game Nashville app. Welcome back here on Chasing Checkers, ESPN 102.5 The Game on The Game Nashville app, all presented by Apple Collision Centers. I'm Chase McCabe. You heard from NASCAR President Steve Phelps. Now let's hear from the two owners that will be representing the drivers in the championship four. And we start with Rick Hendrick, who, of course, is of Hendrick Motorsports and the owner of the number 5 car driven by Kyle Larson and the number 9 by the defending champion, Chase Elliott.
It's been a pretty big season for Hendrick Motorsports. When we started in February, Did you have any idea that your team would take home 16 NASCAR Cup Series wins this season?
No. You know, you always think you're in good shape, but it's been a phenomenal year. I think when I look back at our organization and look at across the board running full cars, it's been all the cars have been competitive. All of them have won races. And, you know, it's really nice when you have a balanced attack and you don't have one car running 20th, but all of the cars have been able to lead laps and run up front and win races. So I've been extremely happy and very humbled by the success of the organization this year.
And one additional question before we jump to the questions from our media. A big year as well for Chevrolet, the Manufacturers Championship. What does that mean to you to be able to help them take home that honor this season?
You know, that I guess outside of us winning the championship, being able to bring it home for Chevrolet is super important to me and our organization and all the Chevy teams, because you know, they take a lot of pride in NASCAR racing and racing in general. They've won a lot of races. They've used to winning a lot of Manufacturers Cups. And so at the beginning of the year, that's always a big goal for us. And they are a major player in our success. So it was super exciting and rewarding to see them get excited about winning the Manufacturers Championship again.
All right, we're now going to go to questions. We'll take as many questions as we can in the time that we have. To kick us off, we're going to go to Bob Pockris. Go ahead, Bob.
Yeah, Rick. Cliff Daniels told me that he wasn't sure whether he'd get a chance to work with another driver after not winning with Jimmy Johnson. So I'm curious if there were ever any thoughts in your head of like, well, maybe he just isn't good. He'd just be better off in a different position other than a crew chief.
I think your question is Cliff Daniels looking at him in any other position other than a crew chief? Is that what you said? That was it?
Yeah.
Is that your question?
Yeah. Well, in light of the fact that he wasn't able to win, he didn't win a race with Jimmy.
Right.
Was there a concern that he just wasn't a winning crew chief?
Oh, okay. I'm sorry. Yeah. Look, he's a super sharp guy. If you look at the way they ran toward the end of the year, we were just getting our program better and starting to click. And of course, Chase won the championship, but Jimmy had some good races there at the end. So that was good momentum. And you could just watch him as he ran the team and made the team better, that he was going to be in a good spot this year. Did I think he could win this many races? You know, nobody ever expects to win that many races in a year. But he's a super sharp guy. He's been in and around our program for a long time, worked with Chad as an engineer on the team. So I've been amazed at how much talent he has in a leadership role.
All right. Next question. We're going to go to Jenna Fryer. Go ahead, Jenna.
Thank you. Hey, Mr. H, I've got a couple questions. I'm going to limit it to two and then get back into the queue. My first question is on Chase. He opened the season as the champion, should have been celebrated all year, but instead you signed this new guy who comes in and wins all these races and sort of takes over the spot as top dog. Have you seen that affect Chase at all, or has it been any sort of issue that you've had to address?
None. You know, Chase is very competitive. He wants to win, but he's happy for the organization. He's never said anything about the fact that he won the championship and now, you know, Kyle's winning a bunch of races. You know, it all comes down to next Sunday, and he's in it to win it. And he's got a chance and a good shot at being a back-to-back champion. So he's a team player, and Chase is super cool. I've been amazed at his maturity and how he looks like a pure veteran of 10 or 12 years. And he actually, every time Kyle wins or one of the other cars win, he texts me and congratulates me. So he's not one of those guys that goes off in the corner and says, well, I need what they have or whatever.
He's so quiet, and he delivered these two real good lines in this postseason, merry off season, happy Christmas, yeah. And then the thing last week about his fans. Did you know he's got that in him, that wit and that humor?
He's super. He's quick. He's really quick, and he's just a super bright guy. And I'm amazed at how he can come back with. You might ask him a question, or you may say, man, you had a good race. I'm sorry that you didn't win it. And he's always, hey, we did well. We did it to ourselves or whatever. He's very, 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 very sharp. You can't rattle him. I've never seen him get rattled over anything. So I think he's poised for another championship here come Sunday.
And then my last one, and I'll get back in the queue. I'm really excited for your answer on this one. Alex Bowman, is he a hack?
I describe a hack. I don't know what a hack is, but he's won four races this year. Denny's won two. And I think Denny just lost it Sunday, and Alex races everybody clean. He's a good soldier. The sponsors love him, the crowd loves him. I think in when you're in the middle of a disappointment and you're frustrated and mad, you might say things that you wouldn't say normally. So but if he's a hack, I'd like to have more of them.
Thank you.
All right. Our next question is going to go to Jeff Gluck. Go ahead, Jeff.
Rick, you've been around so many of the greats, and obviously, I mean, we can see, Larson's unbelievable, but yeah. I'm curious as to your opinion to why, what makes him so great? Why is he that good?
I think he's driven a little bit of everything. And I think car control and racing on the dirt has helped him a lot. But he's got tremendous confidence. He believes that he can drive anything, and he believes he can win in anything. So, that confidence builds a lot of, he just gets in a car ready to go, and he doesn't complain. But he also spends more time than people might know studying setups and studying the history of the races and digging into the information in our company just to see if he can get better or he can make the car better, wanting to help Cliff. But I think confidence, car control is just something that, he's just got a ton of.
And now let's hear from car owner Joe Gibbs.
Just what does it mean from your perspective to have two cars from Joe Gibbs Racing battling for the championship this weekend in Phoenix?
Well, I think, first of all, we're thrilled to be a part of the championship weekend and to get two cars in there. I got to tell you, that last 50 laps of Martinsville, I don't think I've ever experienced something like that, because we actually went into that race with all three cars. You didn't know what was going to happen. And that last 50 laps, I still didn't know what was going to happen. And so it was a thrill for us to get Denny and Martin in. And so a big deal for us, a thrill for our race team, and so proud of everybody at Joe Gibbs Racing. And God's blessed us with so many great people that are working there. And so we're thrilled to be a part of the weekend. We're excited about going to Phoenix.
All right. Well, now we're going to go to questions. We're going to get to as many questions as we can in the time that we have today. And to kick us off, we're going to go to Dave Moody. Dave, go ahead with your question.
Hi, Coach. You and Rick have split this championship deal pretty much down the middle. A couple of your respective employees aren't necessarily getting along right now, but the relationship between you and Rick has always seemed very positive and very respectful. Can you speak to that and your feelings on what he's accomplished in the sport? You've all been pretty good competition for each other over the years.
Yeah, Rick and I, we share Texas back and forth. And of course, when I first was thinking about trying to get into NASCAR, Rick was there. He had Jimmy Johnson, his general manager at the time, helped us and went to a number of the appointments with us. So he helped us get started. And, you know, in those days, we didn't call it an alliance, but that's what it was. And so we shared that, and I get a thrill out of getting a chance to go to the racetrack every weekend and race against so many great race teams, so many great owners. If you think about Roush and you think about Rick and you think about Penske and you think about Haas, and getting a chance to go on those weekends and race against them, it's a thrill for me to be a part of this, be a part of NASCAR, a whole family. This is all we do. We love it, and it's a thrill for us to be a part of it, Dave.
Thank you.
Okay, our next question is going to come from Alex Andrea. Go ahead, Alex.
Hi, Coach. Thanks for your time. I'm curious, Wally Brown was on a call yesterday and said that he feels like Gibbs right now is the underdog compared to Hendrick. I'm curious if you feel similarly that that's the case. Do you guys think you're the underdogs? Do you agree with him?
Yeah, I think the thing about major sports, pro sports, is the fact that it takes place on the racetrack. It takes place on the football field. You can't, it doesn't do any good to try and persuade somebody on something. It's a fact. And the facts are that this year we've chased the Chevys and chased Rick and for sure. And so I kind of feel like Wally was truthful in his analysis, but you never know what's going to happen on the weekend. So I go to every racetrack, you know, certainly this weekend at Phoenix, there's going to be a lot that happens. And we've seen it in the past. You know, I think any of these four cars could win this. And the brakes, things are going to happen, could be on pit road. It could be something that would happen on the racetrack. So I think that's the reason why we love it, is for our fans and our fan base. They're what makes this sport what it is. It's the greatest reality show that you can be a part of, because we don't know what's going to happen. And I think all four of these cars this weekend will have a chance to win this.
And then just as a quick follow-up with Denny's kind of post-race comments and what happened after Martinsville, I'm curious what you make of the feuding in terms of at what point does it become a distraction, I guess, versus, you know, entertaining for the fans. And did you feel like that was a kind of an appropriate reaction by him at the end of that race there?
I think what happens in any sport, there's bitter disappointments. The thrill of victory and the agony of defeat, that's part of pro sports. And certainly it can happen in this sport. You know, Denny, that was really frustrating for him. At Indy, he thought he could win the race, and that situation took place. And then here in Martinsville, but also, we all know that's part of the sport. And so I think my position on that is I have always let the drivers handle everything that happens on the racetrack. I think, you know, in this case, it was a frustration there, but I also think that's part of our sport. Denny's been in a long time, and I kind of think that falls in the drivers. It's in their decisions are made, and the way they handle that, they race against all those guys out there every week. And so I've always told the drivers, hey, make sure that you keep a good relationship. You know, you don't want a bunch of enemies out there. So anyway, I think that's something that just happened as part of our sport. And I think Denny's reaction afterwards was, it was a frustration.
Thank you.
Okay, our next question is going to come from Chase Wilhelm. Go ahead, Chase.
Hey, thank you, Coach Gibbs, for joining us today. My question is, what makes this the year that Denny Hamlin can win his first championship compared to what we've seen years past?
I think Denny's success and everything over these last years, as soon as we put him with Chris Gabehart, I think that combination and the way that the chemistry, the way that works is they've been so consistent. And so you kind of look at that, but also you know how hard it is to win a championship. Denny's an example, won a ton of races, won 3 Daytona 500s, and yet has not been able to win a championship. Has had a chance, but hasn't won it. So I think that, again, the reason why we appreciate championships is because they're so hard. But I think the fact that Chris Gabehart and the team there, and for FedEx, when you stop and think about that, they've been with us now for those 14 years they've been with us. It would be a thrill to win one for them. As we know, sponsorships are so important. We also have Sport Clips on that car. We have Craftsman. Craftsman is on that car with Stanley Black and Decker. So it would be a big deal for us and a big deal for those sponsors if Denny could do that. I would say what gives us a chance is Denny, his experience, and Chris Gabehart and the team.
Thank you, Coach Gibbs. Appreciate it.
Okay, our next question is going to come from Bob Puckris. Go ahead, Bob.
Yeah, Coach, along those lines, what advice do you give Denny about just kind of about the aura of being a great driver who hasn't won the big one?
I think that comes with all pro sports. We know that down through history, there's been a lot of great players that haven't won championships and Super Bowls and NASCAR championships. I mean, it's just part of it. And we've had great drivers over here that are in the Hall of Fame that did not win a championship. And I think Denny probably answered it the best last year when he kind of said he's kind of at peace with what he's been able to do. He's won Daytona 500s, won a bunch of races. Has had a great sponsor, has kept them, you know, through all of the years they've been together, FedEx and Denny. And we appreciate Fred and everybody over there. And so I think he's at peace with it. But also you just know he has a burning desire and going to give it everything he's got on Sunday.
So there you go. Both of the car owners as they get ready for championship four. I will say this. This format, the way it's set up, it can be anybody's. You could have Chase Elliott go back to back. You could have Martin Truex Jr. You could have Denny Hamlin win his first, Kyle Larson win his first. It really could be anybody. But after 9 wins and just the pure dominance of Kyle Larson, I just feel like it needs to be his. Denny Hamlin, you can make a case. The consistency, only the couple wins, but still, he's been right there too. But that's the fun part of this format. But I will say that if Larson is able to get it done, I think it'll be a pretty cool redemption story for him as he goes into Hendrick Motorsports in his first year and wins the championship. That's going to do it for this edition of Chasing Checkers. We'll have full reaction to the championship for next week here on the show. Get some content from the track as well. My thanks to Apple Collision Centers. I'm Chase McCabe on ESPN 102.5 The Game.